Scott Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Hello, welcome to the 5 Yard Dynasty Pod with me, Rich Cooling. So first of all, thank you so much for all the fantastic feedback we had from the last pod. Obviously, slightly different in terms of talking kind of strategy and how to approach your off season. So really enjoyed the feedback and certainly the communication I've had with guys over the past week or so. Got another fantastic pod lined up for you today. So joining me is Julian of the Point After podcast over in Canada. So how are you doing, Julian?
I'm good, Rich. How are you doing, man? Thanks for having me on.
No, it's always good to have you back on. It's it's nice to have a chat. It's second time, so officially now a friend of the show.
Yes, this is my second time on your show. The first time we did kind of a Point After Dynasty Island mashup, and that was a lot of fun. We ran that over on my channel, but we posted it in both places. And I'm just happy to be here, man. I've had a blast just talking to you over the past year, and I just love what you guys are doing over there, and so I'm happy to be on.
Yeah, no, and it's delightful to have you. So before we kind of dive in, we're going to talk through a bit of a free agency rookie draft preview. We're going to talk through some major storylines. But before we do that, if you could just, talk through kind of what you're getting over with the guys over at True North and kind of what you're getting up to with the pod.
Of course, man. If you don't know what we're doing over there at True North, definitely go check us out on Twitter at True North FFB. Basically, our goal is to be the hub for Canadian podcasts, for Canadian fantasy football, and not just Canadians. Obviously, I'm here talking to you over in the UK, but that's the goal, right, is that we want to be that hub. We want to have a TV network, and we have this vision of where we're going. And so we've got a bunch of stuff in place. We're actually revamping a whole new website, bringing out a bunch of stuff that I can't give too much information on, but I will tell you that it'll be focused towards basic fantasy football, giving people the ins and outs of what is fantasy football on a season-long redraft set. Because truth is, Rich, like, most people don't play dynasty. Most people aren't degenerates like we are, who just love this game and are buying players. Like most people don't do that. They play from week one to week 16 and then the season ends. And that's really how you get invested into fantasy football. That's how I started. I started with one league, then all of a sudden I had two, then I had three, and now I'm up to 12 dynasty leagues, and I just love it. And so that's really the vision. I'm super excited to be taking on with the guys there. We just expanded a bunch of writers. We have over 22 people now. When I started at True North, I think I was the eighth or ninth person added to the team, and so we're really growing, and we got some great stuff lined up for all of the 2021 season. Or 2020 season, sorry. And I'm super excited about it. So definitely go check us out, True North FFB. And you can find my podcast specifically on Twitter at The Point After FF as well.
Yeah, it's been amazing to see the rapid growth. Obviously, I became aware of the True North when you joined over, what was that, almost a year ago now?
Yeah, basically a year ago now. Yeah,
and it's been amazing to see, as you said, go from a decent sized outfit to now a huge outfit and really pumping out incredible content.
That's the goal. That's the goal, right? Is we want to have content coming to you every single day. And during the season, we have five podcasts that air weekly. So we've got my show on Friday nights. We have Trav's The True North podcast on, our Trav and Ty. Their show's on Wednesday nights. Jim and Connor run the Gold Jackets QB podcast. That's on Tuesday nights. And then on Saturday nights, we did what we called The Spot, which is where we would have five or six of our True North guys, as well as one or two guests, depending on the week. And we would just break down basically, everything you need to know about fantasy that week, who we like, who we don't like, all that kind of stuff. And then we also got The Smoke Show that airs we have the Jet Sweep Show that airs on Monday Night Football at halftime. That's Will and Smokey's show. And yeah, they're a lot of fun over there. And then, Josh also just released, he just revamped his Smoke Show, and he's releasing a bunch of new content with some fantastic analysts. It's going to be more personality based rather than analytics based, but really just an amazing lineup. He's got like 9 or 10, very, very, very highly ranked and you know, highly sought after fantasy football analyst. So super exciting for him. Those are dropping very, very, very soon. I think he actually may have dropped his first one today. He had Adam Rank on yesterday.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, it was pretty, pretty crazy. I haven't actually checked out the video yet. I think he did post it, but I've been working all morning. So I haven't had a chance to go look at it yet, but definitely go check him out at the Smoke Show. That's at the_smoke_show on Twitter.
Sounds awesome. And yeah, absolutely. Go check out the stuff, guys. So diving into the topic for today. So basically I set Jules with a task of coming up with these three kind of interesting storylines or topics to discuss as we're heading into this kind of free agency draft period. I'm going to chuck in a few of my own, but where are we starting? What are we going to talk about to begin with, Jules?
Well, I wanted to talk about, first of all, this is the time of year where it's draft, it's rookie players, or it's free agency. Like, those are the big things going on right now. So to me, it only makes sense. Let's talk about some of these rookies and let's talk about some of these free agents. So the big one is ironically not a free agent, but Deshaun Watson. This is a highly debated topic this offseason. Nobody really knows what's going to happen. He signed a 4-year, $156 million contract in 2020. He has a no trade clause. You know, so basically he has all of the power in this situation. I think this is really, really interesting. Like, I just have so many questions. I love this player from a talent prospect. Like, it can't get any worse from an organization standpoint than the Texans. So it makes me wonder, like, are we just scratching the surface of what Deshaun Watson can actually be? And, you know, where is he going to go that really unleashes his upside? So, first of all, I just want to put it out there. I think there's a 1% chance he's back in Houston. It just doesn't make any sense to keep him there. This franchise it needs a complete overhaul. To me, like, if you can ship Deshaun Watson and get three firsts for him, you know, probably plus a quarterback back, you know, your team is in a much better position than with Watson and without those picks, because you don't have any, from all of Bob's deals that he's made. So, I think the Texans, they haven't actually made him available for trade, but it's very speculatory. There we go. and yeah, GMs have been picking up the phone. There's a lot of teams that have been calling and lining up for him, but ultimately I think there's a few, you know, really plausible options for him that actually make sense. And for me, it's Miami, Carolina, Denver, and even your New York Jets. So he does have a no trade clause. Like we talked about, he can determine where he goes. But really, like, I just want to talk about some of these options first. So I'll start with the Panthers, because the Panthers have been clearing up cap space recently to what we would assume is make room for Watson on the roster. They cut their center. I can't remember his name right now, but a couple other players as well. They're restructuring their center's contract. His name is, it's just on here somewhere. Yeah, whatever. So they're restructuring that. And then I've heard talks of a CMC plus deal for Watson, which, the Panthers don't really have the draft capital that these other teams have in order to make a push for him. So I think it would have to include a superstar player like this. The salaries obviously match up pretty close in terms of what these two are making. And I think that this could really, like, put this offense over the top, right? I mean, Christian McCaffrey is unbelievable.
But I think, and this is where I guess I kind of differ in terms of how I view team structure and kind of rebuilding. With the way Christian McCaffrey's contract is structured and with his age and the fact that he's a running back, I personally don't think he's got any trade value at all. I'd view him as essentially a nothing in a trade for Deshaun Watson. If I was the Texans, say, or another team, I wouldn't be trading a first-round pick for Christian McCaffrey with his current contract. I wouldn't be trading a first-round pick for a player for a running back to pay him $16-plus million a year.
Mm-hmm. So he's already been injured for basically an entire year, and it has, 900 touches on his
body. So I think that hearing people say, I know I've seen quoted that Christian McCaffrey and one first, or Christian McCaffrey and two firsts, I just don't get it, because to me, I'd want Christian McCaffrey and four firsts. And this is where, personally, I don't think Deshaun Watson is going to get traded. I think that the big thing for me is that Deshaun Watson's camp's come out and said, that he's not going to hold out of training camp. He's not going to hold out of OTAs. And I think that's the big thing. I think he realizes that as much as he wants out, he can't disrupt the team to that level. And I think that Houston's going to stand pat. They're going to keep hold of him because I don't think a team is going to be willing to pay what it's going to need to be to get him out. And I think the price is going to need to be 3, 4, 5 first round picks. And I just don't see a team honing
up
that level.
Here's the deal. Here's the deal I like the most, and the one that I'm looking at that I think makes the most sense as well, is it's with Miami Dolphins. They have the number 3 and number 18 picks in this first round class. You know, we hear trade talks like this all the time, but I throw a 2021 first in there, and then probably also a 2021 second and third, and I also throw in Tua. So we got 5 picks, Tua Tagovailoa, 4 Deshaun Watson. I think, like, this makes sense. Miami is a quarterback away. You know, they're a receiver away, something like that. Like, you know, they're just one piece, really. And Deshaun Watson's just he does it all, right? And so if you were to be able to bring this guy in on your team, you know, with athletic players like Mike Gesicki, and then, you know, they still got a second, third in this year's class, I think they can go and get one of these top 5 wide receivers, you know, one of these day 2 guys. And I just think that adds so much to this team. So, to me, that one makes the most sense. I wanted to touch on what you said about Watson not wanting to hold out, because I think that makes a big deal, right? If he's going to hold out, if he's already committed to holding out, losing this year on a comp, you know, it's not technically lost. Like, he doesn't get paid if he holds out. But I think that from a psychological standpoint, like, if you have this disgruntled star and you can go and get 4 to 5 first and second round picks for him, you know, plus a guy in return, I just don't see why you don't take that. Like, you know, clearly the chemistry is bad in that locker room. Like, you really want a guy as, you know, the leader of your team as your core who doesn't want to be there? Like, that's just, to me, it builds a bad franchise foundation. And with a new head coach, with a new regime coming in, I think that, you know, if I'm them, I wipe it all. I wipe the disc and get what we can for the studs that we have. I mean, Deshaun Watson's a generational talent, but I mean, really, what's going to happen? Like, he's going to hit when he gets to free agency. You think he's going to want to resign? Do you guys have any chance at winning a Super Bowl in the next 3 years or 4 years during his extension? Probably not. So.
I completely, agree with what you're saying. I think I just think that the Texans and a little bit the NFL, if I'm being honest, I think the NFL owners are probably getting together and saying that, you know, the Texans can't trade him, because if the Texans, you know, trade a player that's signed a contract less than a year ago,
what does that say about signing a contract in the NFL?
It's going to open up, it's going to create chaos in the NFL. And you've already heard rumors with Russell Wilson potentially, you know, talking about wanting to be traded, that kind of thing. And I think that the Texans as an organization almost can't allow, it sounds awful because it sounds quite anti-labor in terms of sort of freedom of movement for players and things, but I think if the Texans allow the Sean Watson to force his way out, you're going to see the NFL turn into kind of the NBA in the way that you've got such, you know, player empowerment and such freedom of movement. And I think that the NFL owners are really going to, you know, not, it sounds awful, but not want that to be the case. I agree with you. I think that Miami deal, it makes too much sense for everybody. The only thing is that, you know, you've got the entire Miami kind of the owner, that everything that's been built there, they've been talking about Tua for the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't just a 1 year process was Tua. They were very much, the rebuild was around going and getting Tua. They've brought Tua in. Yes, he was underwhelming this year, but I do think, you know, that was a horrific hip injury that he was coming back from.
And he's a rookie. Rookie, man. Like, I always give the benefit of the doubt to players who I believe are talented. I just am not sure that, like, his upside in terms of fantasy are astronomical. Like, obviously, they're not Deshaun Watson levels, in my opinion. But that doesn't mean that, you know, Tua is a bad quarterback. He's a fantastic game manager. He's very smart. He's got good IQ. But like you said, that hip injury, I think, was hindering him a little bit. And then you come in into the NFL and you start, and then you get benched, and then you're back starting. Like, it's just that's really hard on a rookie player, especially at the quarterback position, who's, you know, supposed to be the stabilizing force on the offense. So you know, that's kind of my take on that. But what I did also want to point out, because we talked about this contract, but Watson's only owed $10.5 million in 2021, which is only like $0.8 million more than Sam Darnold is. And so any team trading for him, you know, it's money in the bank, right? That's the other concern, is that he's still, like, this year, he's not actually owed that much money. It's the following, you know, backloaded years. And so we'll see what happens. The other one I wanted to bring up is your New York Jets, because these guys could put a pretty serious package together as well, right? Obviously, I think it would include, you know, Darnold plus the number two overall. And then they have the 23rd pick, sorry, from Seattle, you know, and then, like I said, I think it takes like four or five picks to get a deal done for Watson, because like you said, it doesn't make any sense for them to, unless they're actually recouping value on this player, right? Like that's where it is determined for me, is if they recoup value, then this isn't Deshaun Watson pushing his way out. This is a guy requesting a trade, a team going out, making a negotiation that works for both sides and gets the deal done. Now, like if he holds out or he just doesn't show up and, you know, and then gets traded, and is that's to me is him forcing his way out. And that's just a terrible look. It does not look good on the franchise. It doesn't look good on the NFL. And like you said, it turns into the NBA.
Yeah. And I think that this is also part of the why the Texans are saying we're not trading him, because they've realized that they've got literally no leverage in this situation. You know, he's got a no trade clause. He can turn around and say, I don't want to be here, but I'm going to pick where I get traded. So this is the Texans just trying to say, we're not trading him, is to try and claw back some form of leverage. If, look, speaking purely as a Jets fan here, don't get me wrong, I would absolutely love Deshaun Watson to come be the quarterback. You know, I'm talking, this is a guy, my life as a Jets fan started in sort of 98, 99. I've had a couple of years with Chad Pennington before his shoulder fell off. I had one above average season of Brett Favre, but we didn't even make the playoffs. And that's pretty much the, you know, the peak of the quarterback in my lifetime kind of thing. So yes, I'd be super excited if Deshaun Watson was the quarterback. But I just don't, I'm not comfortable with us giving up what it would take to get Deshaun Watson. Because I think that if we were to give up, you know, you talked about the second and the first, the second overall, the 23rd pick from Seattle.
Yeah,
23rd. And then we've got a future pick from Seattle next year as well. Okay, we're giving up all this draft capital, but what are we actually going to have to build around Deshaun Watson if he comes? We're going to have a good young left tackle, okay, and pretty much nothing else on offense. Well, that's the exact same situation he's just come from in Houston, and they won however many games, was it three or four games this year? Yeah. It's, you know, why would we, you know, blow everything up to go and get a quarterback and then not have anything to put around him? I think that it just doesn't make sense.
I think it's the same conversation that we just said with the Texans, right? Like, if the Jets aren't in a position to win a championship in the next 4 years, it's just not going to happen. So why trade for a guy to be your franchise quarterback, you know, on this massive contract that he just signed, you know, so that he can leave in free agency in 4 years? Like, I don't see him, you know, likely resigning in that situation. And because he's probably playing on a team with a bunch of bums because they sent all their draft capital. So, but, you know, like, to me, that's my second segment. I actually want to talk about the Jets QB room, because I think there's a lot of things they can do. They have the number two overall pick. They could work with Sam Darnold. You know, we'll get into all of that. But ultimately, like, I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense. I do see this package going around a lot. You know, the first, the 23rd, a future second, and Darnold for Watson. And like you just said, you upgrade a quarterback, but it puts your team backwards. Yeah. Everybody takes a step back other than the quarterback room. And, you know, to me, like, I'm not the biggest Sam Darnold fan, but I don't think he was the problem. You know, like, I am very, very much aware of the Gase effect. And I know what happens to players when he's gone. I think that Sam Darnold is a good, talented quarterback. He's just had absolutely no offensive line, terrible play calling, no receivers to throw the ball to. Like, what do you want from the guy? So anyways, we'll get into that.
Well, but, let's dive into it now. It makes sense. We'll agree to disagree with Sam Darnold. I think for me, having watched him over the past 3 years, I see a guy that still makes the most
scared of ghosts.
boneheaded, stupid decisions on a weekly basis. There is three or four times a game where he just makes idiotic decisions in terms of he'll be out in space instead of throwing
the ball away, he runs out of bounds.
And loses 5 yards. Instead of, you know, he'll throw the ball away across his body rather than throwing the way he's facing so that he's got no power. And then the ball doesn't get out of bounds, doesn't get past line of scrimmage. Yes, I get that he has not been in a good situation. He has not had any competent weapons to throw the ball to. The offensive line has been a complete sieve. And he's had an awful kind of offensive coordinator, you know, Dow Longins. I don't even know if we can call him an offensive coordinator. He's Adam Gase's mate. That's his job title. He's not an offensive coordinator. He's Adam Gase's mate.
God, I hope that guy can't get another job in the NFL.
Well, of course he will, because Adam Gase is going to go and get a job somewhere else and Dow Longins will go with him. He basically makes Adam Gase coffee and that's the only reason he's got a job in the NFL. But I think Sam Darnold is broken. And I think that I'm fully convinced that he's going to go somewhere and be a success and probably be an all-pro, Pro Bowl caliber quarterback in the new system. But I just think that within New York, they need to turn a fresh leaf over the quarterback position. You've finally got some form of, dare I say, kind of enthusiasm around the team. I think they've made a really smart head coach hire.
They did.
I think they've
That's the best decision the Jets have made in a few years, I think.
I think that the GM, you know, Joe Douglas has shown with his one draft that he's had, with the way that he's moved in free agency, I think he's really showed that he's very astute and he's set the team up on a really good platform to succeed over the next couple of years. And I just think that unless you turn over that leaf at quarterback, you're not going to see that complete culture kind of flip. And I think that you're just going to end up being, this is the same old Jets. Well, that's my thoughts. What do you think?
Well, I think that's a really good point, man. And the thing that I want to like really highlight is New York is an extremely tough market. It's tough to be a losing team playing in New York City. No matter where you are, it's really, really difficult. And like we talked about, he didn't have any weapons. He had a terrible offensive line, terrible head coach. And then you hear the news and you hear the media and things start to get in your head. You're 22 years old, then you get mono and then people start saying you're scared to go. So like, you know what I mean? Like this is like a psychological game just as much as it is a physical. And so when we talk about Sam Darnold making these bonehead mistakes, like, yeah, he did make those mistakes, but I think it's because he's trying to do something. He wants something to happen, right? So he's, you know, it's almost the Carson Wentz effect where he's trying to put it all on his back so that he can make a big play or do something that's going to like be a highlight play, right? Mechanically, I think he is a good quarterback. Like you said, he does make some bonehead moves, but from a mechanics standpoint, I think he actually is pretty good. And so I think, you know, you bring in Robert Saleh, brilliant, brilliant mind, football mind. He brings in his offensive coordinator from the 49ers. His name is slipping my mind right now, but
Mike,
I'll find it.
Mike LaFleur. It's Matt yes, LaFleur's yeah, little yeah. brother.
Exactly. There you go, Matt LaFleur. I shouldn't know that. Packers fan, but and you know, you bring in this philosophy where it is a culture change, right? Like and that's where it comes down to me is if Sam Darnold isn't going to buy into this culture change, then they got to get him out of here. But they brought in Robert Saleh, and they now have what, a month and a half to evaluate what they got in Sam Darnold up until the draft and figure out if this is actually going to work. Because like I said, I think he can be a competent quarterback. I just think they need to slow the game down for him, right? He can't be putting the game on his shoulders. We've seen that he can't handle that. So, you know, go and run an offense similar to what they were able to do in San Francisco, right? I know that Robert Saleh was the defensive coordinator, but you bring in this young offensive mind. And I think that you slow the game down. Don't put so much pressure on him. I just think from a psychological standpoint, this makes a lot more sense. I would draft Sewell at number two, give Sam Darnold somebody to protect him. And then you got the 23rd overall pick too, where you can probably go, running back, right? Or you go wide receiver and you still get a value guy, or you shore up, you know, the actual positional needs and go corner or linebacker, or really anywhere on the defense, which I think is probably what they do. But at two, I would take Sewell, do whatever you want with the 23rd pick, probably go defense, but I'm keeping Darnold. I think that this is a whole organizational change. And if he won't buy in, yeah, cut him, trade him, do whatever. But if he's bought in, I say let him roll.
Yeah, and I think, I guess the one thing that I'm holding out hope on, if we are going to go with Darnold, is that we're able to, you know, use those picks to build around him. This is probably the ideal system in terms of that Shanahan scheme, that sort of, you know, he is a good mobile quarterback. He's good in space. He's good when he gets outside the pocket. And I think that if he's going to succeed, it's going to be in this offense.
So just don't make him do too much. Yeah. That's my two cents, right?
My overall concerns, I think he lacks elite arm strength. I think he's shown that, you know, Rashard Perriman was, you know, he wasn't great, but he was open several times this year, and Darnold was just not accurate.
Just couldn't get it there.
To go and get it to him. And I think that he's shown incredible flashes. Some, you know, Sam Darnold's highlight plays are up there with any quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, that touchdown run he had, that was phenomenal play.
But also just some of the, you know, the ability to squeeze the ball into tight windows and make those tight window throws, the ability to progress through reads is incredible, but he doesn't do it on a consistent basis. And I guess what I'm saying is that I would rather, you know, my thing is I would rather the way the rebuild is going, I think we're going to have to pay Sam Darnold big money. If we decide to go with Darnold, we're going to have to pay him that, whether it be the, you know, the fifth year option, which is going to be like $25 million, whether it's going to be a franchise tag, whether it's going to be a long-term contract before the rest of the team is there ready to build. Whereas I think that if you go with a rookie quarterback in a Zach Wilson or Justin Fields, which is my preferred option, and properly swing for the fences, you can tie your time scale to your rookie quarterback in that realistically, the Jets aren't looking to compete in 2021. The Jets are looking to compete in 2022 and 2023. Where if you're paying Sam Darnold $25 million, I think that hamstrings you in different areas of the team. Whereas if you're paying a rookie quarterback one or two, or what I think is probably four or five if they're a second overall pick, I just think that allows you to put more around that rookie quarterback to enable you to win.
Yeah, I like what you said there, because you know, the Dolphins did this, right? They built a team and then they inserted a quarterback. And the 49ers did that. They built a team. They inserted Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, they can get it done with CJ Beathard. They can get it done with Nick Mullins because they have the team around them. Right. And so I do like that philosophy. I like going that way. I think there's a couple options here, right? Like I said, you can go Siwa at number two, or you can go Fields or Wilson, who, you know, whichever way the franchise leans. What I thought was interesting is they can extend his fifth year option for 2022. But it has to be done by May 3rd of this year. And that option will be anywhere from 15 to 20 million, I believe is what it said. And it might be a little bit higher now because he's a quarterback. And
with the CBA, this is the first year that those fifth year options are fully guaranteed. So whereas normally those fifth year options were only guaranteed for injury. So if we could have said we'll pick up his fifth year option, played him this year, if he was rubbish, we could have just gone, okay, we're not giving you the fifth year option. But now, if it's we pick up his fifth year option on May 3rd, that means on 2022, he's going to count 20. I think it's 25 million, but it could be changing because I know the cap's wiggling around all over the place.
Yeah, the cap's in a weird spot right now.
Yeah. So, so that I think you're basically saying we have to decide for the next 2 years by the draft whether we're going with Sam Darnold or not. And I think that I'm not confident that Sam Darnold is the right decision for the next 2 years. So I would personally rather go in a different option, because I think
that's
that
very fair, man.
It's literally it's either Darnold or a rookie. I don't think there's any other option. You can't sort of try and say,
I can't imagine they're bringing
Darnold
in a free agent.
Year.
The old, you know what I would love to see though? I'd love to see Ryan Fitzpatrick back in his Jets jersey.
I can't get my head around all this Fitzpatrick love. It's been driving me crazy for the last couple of years, okay? This is a guy that, yes, he is incredible when he's on.
He went to Harvard, Rich.
Murph was talking on the show, on the headline show on Monday. So he was saying about his Bucks jersey's in the Hall of Fame because he was the first quarterback to pass for 400 yards in three consecutive games, okay? Fantastic. That's incredible. But you've only got to look at the Jets' 2015 season, I want to say, when he was the quarterback. All we needed to do week 16 or week 17, I can't remember which one it was beat the Bills. And he goes out and throws five interceptions. That's Ryan Fitzpatrick. Okay, he is incredible when it's all
He's
working,
always been that way.
But just just when you think he's good, just when you think that he's going to deliver for you, he'll turn in an absolute stinker. And that is what's going to happen. The problem is
here's the thing though, Rich, like that is Ryan Fitzpatrick of old. I 100% agree. He comes in, he plays like four or five games. Teams think he's good. And then he plummets and he's, you know, throwing four interceptions a game for like 3 weeks straight until they bench him. But that didn't happen this year in Miami. He played good all year. And you know what I noticed was he was having fun, man. Like, he's out there having fun. So I think if he can have fun on a football field again, like, there's just not so much pressure on, like...
But that's that's exactly it, is that he succeeds when there's no pressure. He was coming into these games for Miami. The game was essentially lost. If he came in and did nothing and threw a couple of picks, there was nothing lost. The same as last year. Miami were trying to tank. And it's like, I just think that people... It's like the Gardner Minshew thing. People look at him, he's got the beard, you know, he's wearing Deshaun Jackson's stupid jacket and gold chain, and then Gardner Minshew with the tash and stuff like that. And the media, like, buy into the brand rather than the actual player. Let's be honest. Gardner Minshew was absolute trash. Gardner Minshew was awful. But because he had this whole, like, bandana headband and the tash, people were like, oh, Gardner Minshew's amazing. He's the future quarterback of the Jacks. And it's like, no, he was appalling. And it's the same with Fitzpatrick. Yes, the guy is a gunslinger. Yes, the guy takes risks. But as soon as you rely on Fitzpatrick to win you a game, when the pressure is on, he will completely wilt and fall apart.
But I mean, Lee, you said it yourself. I mean, the Jets aren't competing in 2021. Let him go out there, fling the ball, have some fun, man. But no, I did just want to say too, you know, Darnold himself is... actually, I think I already read this fact. But yeah, he's owed just shy of $10 million in this season. And so even if you do franchise tag him, right, if you take a quarterback at number two, you're actually going to be paying that quarterback more than Sam Darnold is making in his rookie year, like, just because of the, you know, where he's being drafted. And so that to me is the question. Do you draft a quarterback at two and keep Darnold on the roster and let these guys compete? If you draft a quarterback at number two, are you trading Darnold? Like, you know, like that to me is the question, right? Like, I think you could draft a guy and let him sit for a year and then just, you know, not pick up Darnold's fifth year option, let him walk in free agency and you've got your starting quarterback. But then you miss out on, you know, potentially the best left tackle in the past 10 years, right? So you tell me, which way would you rather the Jets go with those options?
I think that it's, as I said, I think the decision has to be made. I don't think there's a, we can keep Sam Darnold if we're drafting a quarterback. It either needs to be Sam Darnold is the quarterback for the next 2 years, and you commit to that now and you pick up his fifth year option and you say, right, we're going to go to try and win a title in 2022 with Sam Darnold as our quarterback. Or you trade Sam Darnold before the draft and you go with a rookie quarterback, whether it be Fields or Wilson. I'll be honest, I personally would prefer Fields because I think his ceiling is high, but I completely get everybody. You know, Wilson is literally a dream fit for that Shanahan offense.
I personally just think he's the better back or the better quarterback.
Really? You take Wilson over Fields?
Okay, I would,
that's
interesting. Yeah.
I think that, I mean, that's a debate for another day. We won't get into that. I think that there needs to be a clear, distinct decision made by mid-April, because I don't think you can go into the draft with a question mark. I think that if Donald
he needs
to be traded before the draft, because...
But that also makes it really difficult, right? Because there's like five prolific passers in this draft that, you know, teams are excited about to bring in as a potential starting quarterback. What are you even getting for Darnold? Right? Like, this is a guy who's now, if you trade him and a team's going to pick, you know, trade for him, they'll pay him the $10 million this year. Or actually, I think it's $4.5 million because the dead cap goes on the Jets books. But, you know, you pick up his whatever it is, $5 million this year. And then next year, you're committing to Sam Darnold by picking up, because any team that trades for him has to, you know, have the same thing in place, right? They have to guarantee, they have to say that they're going to have him picked up his fifth year option by May 3rd.
So Connor Rogers and Rich Shimini, who are two Jets beat reporters, so they reported that the asking price is a second and a fourth. and they're expecting the Jets to get a second. So I think that's, you know, when you're looking at the prices of, you know, that Stafford's going around for and that kind of thing, I think that that's a, you know, if
it's actually a value deal.
As a Jets fan, I'd be happy getting a second for Sam Darnold. You know, it's better than a comp pick that we'd get if we let him walk in free agency. So
totally right. You're getting a fourth, then maybe a third if you're lucky.
Realistically.
Yeah. I think it would be interesting too if he goes to a team that has a lot of cap space, and you know, then they can pick up that fifth year option and not have it be a big deal, right? Not have it be you know, like with the Jets, right? Like they have a lot of cap space available. But like we said, is this a team that they then want to commit this, or if they're at the number two and you can go and get a rookie quarterback that you're going to, like I said, you will have to pay him a little more initially, but for what you're expecting to get out of the, you know, number two pick, take another shot at it. Right.
So moving on to, I guess my topic that I wanted to have a chat with you about. So this is perhaps slightly more kind of fantasy centric, but I'm looking at probably what I'm classing as the second tier of free agent running backs. So we've got the, you know, the Aaron Jones, he's probably the only real kind of bell cow back that's going to hit free agency. But in that second tier, you've got Kenyon Drake, Leonard Fournette, Chris Carson, James Conner, Phil Lindsay, maybe Lev Bell. I'll be honest, I'm really struggling to see any kind of landing spots for them at all. And I get that I'm very much a running back is a one contract position, and as soon as they hit free agency, there's no point in paying them. But what do you think? Do you think any of these guys are going to get signed? Do you think any of them are going to get deals? Or,
you know, as much as I hate Kenyon Drake, I actually think this guy can still be a valuable fantasy asset, and he is a value in dynasty drafts right now. He's falling to the 10th, 11th round of Superflex startups, and I'm scooping that value there because 26 years old, same age as Chris Carson, really didn't break out or do anything, you know, in terms of viable fantasy success until his fourth and fifth year in the league this year when he was transition tagged. So I'm honestly not sure what they're going to do. I don't think that they view Kenyon Drake as a long-term option. And I don't really think that there's any teams out there willing to pay up for Kenyon Drake. So I think it's pretty possible he gets re-signed on a 2-year, $8 million deal, which is still pretty good money. I know we wanted like 10 to 12 last year, but you ain't come into a 2-year, $8 million deal. You have him till you're 28 and, you know, and then you draft somebody, right? You draft a guy behind him. You got Eno Benjamin sitting in the wings. You got Chase Edmonds there, who's kind of that receiving back. And then you go and draft somebody 2 years from now, you let Kenyon Drake walk in free agency. That's kind of my take there. Yeah.
And I think that, you know, if Drake is just going for the money, I just don't think it's going to exist, quite frankly. I think that there's, you know, we had 8 running backs come into the league last year who were essentially successes. Yeah. Okay. Yes, this is a weak running back class, but you've still got potentially 3 or 4 options that are going to come in. Would you rather, you know, go and get a Kenneth Gainwell in the third or fourth round or go and pay Kenyon Drake $8-9 million a year? Like it's just not a
conversation. Or even some of these other running backs, man, you know, like James Conner, Phillip Lindsay, these are still 25, 26 year old running backs. They're in the same position as Kenyon Drake and are going to be a hell of a lot cheaper in terms of, you know, what their expected price is going to be. So I don't think anyone pays up for him. I don't think he goes and gets the money he wants. The Cardinals knew what they were doing when they transition tagged him last year. You know, people don't pay for 26-year-old running backs. They just don't. Like,
no, absolutely.
They won't. And like you said, you know, you can go get Gainwell in the third and probably going to get the same production out of him on way, way cheaper. And so, yeah, I think he could be in for the franchise tag. He could be in for another. Actually, I don't think you can transition tag somebody 2 years in a row, but they could franchise tag him this year. And then he'd be 27.
It's going to get expensive though, isn't it?
It would get expensive for sure. But you get that franchise tag regardless.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it'll be interesting to see how that one plays out. My consensus, he's in Arizona.
Yeah. What about Chris Carson then? So we've got Chris Carson. I was convinced that his only landing spot, I obviously wrote my article on free agent running backs, the only landing spot I can see is Seattle. I can't see anybody paying him money more than probably 5 million a year.
Yeah. And I think it's the same deal. It's the same deal with Carson as it is for Drake. You know, he's 25, which is still actually relatively young, but has dealt with a series of injuries. He's had multiple thousand yard seasons, which I do love about Chris Carson. He's just a aggressive, powerful runner. He fits Seattle super, super well. And I know Seattle's offered him basically 5 million a year. And Carroll's come out and said, if he needs to go get paid or wants to go get paid somewhere, like, he can go get paid. This is just what we're offering. I mean, like you said, I don't think he gets a whole lot higher than that. I think that Seattle's probably his best landing spot. If I had to pick a different one, you know, I'd love to see him go to Miami. There's a big void there. They have a lot of cap space. And, you know, he fits that profile. We saw it last year with Miles Gaston. Like, these guys were just – that's the way that they that's the way that they kind of ran the ball, you know, just aggressive and, you know, rely on the power side of it so that you can create the play action. So I like Chris Carson that way, but again, this is a guy in dynasty drafts, his ADP is falling way down. He's going in basically the same round, same spot as Kenyon Drake is. And again, I will take that shot there because I do know what the upside is, right? Chris Carson has RB1 upside. He got way more involved in the passing game this season, which is fantastic to see because you could, you know, he could go and sign somewhere and be not a pass catching back, but be involved in the pass game, you know, probably see 40 targets, you know, come up with 30 receptions and, you know, three or four receiving touchdowns. That adds a huge boost to his floor on an already, you know, aggressive and powerful runner. So I do like Carson. I'm not really trading up for him at any point. I'm not like actively going out and buying because like I own Carson in a few spots and that's his value is kind of just like, it's like, I don't really know what I got. And so most people are lowballing. Like if you're getting an offer for Chris Carson, like it's not anywhere near RB1 upside. It's not even generally RB2. So I'm just holding in that case. Yeah. What do you think?
And this is, well, you know, I feel like I say this on literally every podcast I record in that, this is the exact type of player that I don't want to own anywhere. In yeah. that I refuse to own what I classify as volume-based RB2s. So it's guys that I don't think are elite. The only reason they get production is because they have volume. And I particularly don't want those guys that come in towards the back end of their first contract. And this is why I've been saying, you know, for the past 12 months that I want to be selling Chris Carson. I want to be selling Kenyon Drake. I want to be selling Leonard Fournette. And particularly, I want to be selling James Conner because I just think that those are the type of guys that, yes, they can produce decent numbers for you on
but
a
their careers
basis.
Can fizzle out just
but,
as easily.
But yeah. also, I can go and find that production. I would rather own four players in the Jeff Wilson, DJ Dallas tier than one Chris Carson because I think on any given week, I can go out and I can find a Jeff Wilson who I can plug and play and get me 10 to 15 points. Mm-hmm. Whereas that's all I'm getting from Chris Carson. He's never given me 20, 25 points on a weekly basis. So those are the type of players that I particularly want to avoid. Yeah. And I think this year is going to be more so than ever because I think where the cap has shrunk, you know, we've got a ridiculous amount of people that are going to be available in free agency. You've just got to look at the list of receivers yeah. that I just don't think teams are going to be paying running backs, especially when you look at the success that the rookies had last year.
Yeah, no, I don't think they will either. And that's why I do think that he ultimately lands back in Seattle. He knows the offense. It's a good fit for him. But I did just want to bring this up because I just wanted to let you know, Carson played only 12 games this year. He rushed for just shy of 700 yards at 4.8 of clip. And five touchdowns. And then on top of that, he saw 46 targets, 37 receptions, and just shy of 300 yards, and then four touchdowns through the air. So I'm not entirely sure that, like, this past season he got his fantasy success off of volume. Even in 2019, like, that is where the volume play is. That's the upside that I'm talking about. Like you said, you know, he saw 278 attempts on the ground and – you know, 50 targets or 47 targets through the air. So he's up over the 325. That is definitely a volume based RB2. But, you know, I look for players that are able to hit, you know, just shy or about that 5 yard per carry cap. And at 25 years old, I'm still willing to roster this guy in terms of, in dynasty startups. Like I said, in the 9th, 10th, 11th round, I will still take that shot there. And I totally get taking the upside of you know, a DJ Dallas over one of these guys for what they can become. But, you know, I'm in the 11th, 12th round of my draft. And if I can go and snag one of these guys as an RB3, get RB2 weeks out of my flex spot, I'm pretty happy with that. So we'll kind of see how that goes. I think that there's, you know, there's a lot of ways to play fantasy football, especially dynasty football.
And I think it's a roster construction point, isn't it? Is, you know, as I said, that I'd rather have one, if I can get two studs, great, but one stud and 10 bench running backs and that are in that kind of RB 50 plus mold. And that's just how
they'll step into voids, right? That's absolutely one of the things that I actually talked about this on one of my shows with Jordan McNamara, the writer for Analytics of Dynasty, is he was telling me about how you can basically, like, your Wayne Gallman types, Jeff Wilson, DJ Dallas, like, these are all players that, like, one injury, you know, they're one injury away from being a fantasy relevant player. You can get them at the bat, you know, the 20th round of your rookie starter of your dynasty startups. And, you know, they can step in to be an RB2 for 4 weeks, right? DJ Dallas had a stretch this year where he was an RB1 for 3 weeks straight.
Yeah.
Right. And the people who were paying attention were able to reap those benefits. So I do love that method. That's something I've been doing in a lot of my dynasty startups, is just grabbing those late round guys who, you know, like, are able to step in and produce like that. Wayne Gallman's a perfect example. This guy's going in the 22nd round of Superflex dynasty startups. He's a free agent this year. Like, we don't know where he's going to land. You know, he could go in somewhere. We saw that he was able to actually do some stuff with the touches that he was able to get. I'm not saying that you should be going out and buying Wayne Gallman, but in terms of, like, a late dynasty stash that you can just grab and put on your bench that's going to produce for you, like, running backs have the highest upside of any players.
100%. Like, as soon as a running back gets injured, you can almost pencil that running back in for volume. If a stud wide receiver goes down, then that wide receiver too doesn't suddenly get 15 targets a game. Like, it doesn't work like that. Whereas, you know, if there's an Austin Ekeler injury again, Justin Jackson and Josh Kelly in San Diego, then in LA, are suddenly really viable options. At some point in the next 10 years, I will actually start calling them the LA Chargers. But
what about the Raiders?
They're still the LA Raiders to me, don't worry. So before we'll dive into your final topic, I just want to talk about, I guess, my next topic. So this is Trevor Lawrence. We've already decided it's fairly obvious that he's going number one to the Jags. I saw a really interesting article that was saying some teams don't have him as the number one quarterback. Mm-hmm.
Some teams actually have Zach Wilson.
But actually, apparently, if you read that article a little bit more, it was saying that the teams that don't have him as number one on their board is because they've taken him off their board because they've established that the Jags have taken him at number one. So, so the Jags, they've got some very interesting options in the receiving game. They've got DJ Chark, who I guess is probably the kind of dynasty darling in terms of, I have seen more go and buy low on DJ Chark articles and threads and comments than any other player I can have ever imagined.
I'm one of those guys.
Well, there you go. And then you've got, obviously, Laviska Shenault, who is a very interesting rookie. Do you think that Trevor Lawrence is going to turn these two into fantasy studs or not? Or where do you sit on that?
I do. And I don't just think it's Trevor Lawrence. You know, I look at this offense, I see 250 vacated targets in Tyler Eifert, Keelan Cole, D.D. Westbrook. They had another guy in there. I can't, his name slipped in my mind.
Colin Johnson? You know, he'll be back.
Yes. Yeah. Chris Conley. That's who it was. They had, you know, between these four players, 250 vacated targets. The only two, you know, true wide receivers they have on this team right now are DJ Chark and Laviska Shenault. And, you know, and then they got J-Rob in the backfield. And this is a super young offense that I don't think they need to add a whole lot outside of the quarterback position. So they got that covered. You got 250 vacated targets. Like I said, I did a thread breaking this down, and I actually took Calvin Ridley's 2019 breakout season where he finished as the wide receiver five. And I took, his 2020 season. Yeah, 2019 season, and then translated it to his 2020 season, and then DJ Chark's 2020 season, and tried to predict what's going to happen in 2021 via target share, advanced metrics. Definitely go check it out. I did a whole podcast on that as well, and the results were honestly mind-blowing in terms of how similar these players are, not just from, like, a physical stature, but also from contested catch rate, from true catch percentage, from high separation ability. Like Chark actually ranked higher than Calvin Ridley in a lot of these categories, but he has, like you mentioned earlier, Gardner Minshew throwing him the football, Jake Luton. Like, it's just, you're not going to get it done like that. But I do love both these players because they're freak athletes. They are, you know, just fantastic football players. I love what they do. I love their size, I love their hands, I love viscous speed. And I think that both of these guys can actually finish as top 20 wide receivers.
That's bold. That is very bold. I'll be honest, at the price that these two are going at, I'm not touching them. If you had to give me an option at current price, yes, I'd take Laviska Shenault, because I think that the cost is significantly less at the moment, and I wouldn't be shocked if he outproduced Chark. But yeah, that's, I just don't get it. I'll be honest. I don't think Chark is an incredible talent. I think you can, you know, and you did a great job making the argument kind of for DJ Chark being a breakout. I just think that the way his kind of production has tracked, and I just think that him as a kind of a profile coming out, I think that the Jags are going to go out and spend some big money on a stud receiver. I wouldn't be shocked if they spend some money in free agency and go and get someone. I just don't think that Chark is going to be a, you know, as you said, top 20 receiver this next year.
See, and you know, my argument is kind of the opposite. I don't see why they would go spend money on a free agent wide receiver. I mean, you've got these two young, I think, talented players and James Robinson. Then you know, I can see them drafting a guy. But to me, like, this team still isn't a competitor. I want to beef up the defense. And so I would probably spend money on, you know, basically what Miami did last year, where they brought in 7 or 8 free agent linebackers, corners. Like, again, the name is slipping my mind right now. But they brought in two.
Signed Byron Jones for big money from Dallas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Byron Jones. And they have Xavier Howard on the other side. And, like, you know, that we saw how elite that defense was. So if I'm the Jags, I follow that blueprint. I go and add a bunch of defensive pieces, experience on the defense, because that goes a long way. You can get by on offense on just talent. You literally can. You can get by on, like, you know, of course it helps when you have smart players, but you can get by on speed and size. And, you know, we saw the Jags make multiple plays this year where they just threw the ball up to DJ Chark, or, you know, gave it to James Robinson, and he just did amazing things with the ball in his hand. So you can win, like, I'm not going to say win football games when we're talking about the Jags, but you can play football games with a young offense. And to be a truly, like, elite team, I think you need to have that defensive anchor. You need to have that core. And right now the Jags just don't have it. So if I'm them, I'm spending up on defense and free agency. I'm leaving the wide receiver position alone. Maybe I draft a guy. I think that that's very possible. I think they could bring in, you know, a third down receiving back as well. And, yeah, but I'm all about these two guys. I'm planting my flag on both of them. I wanted to pull this up here for you because I actually traded up to draft Laviska in a recent Superflex startup. And so I want to tell you the players that were around him, and you tell me whether you want the players ahead of him or behind him. Okay, so I took him at the – one second. I have it here. Now I just got to find it.
So whilst you're looking that up, I just want to say, so I am now going to commit – I'm going to spend the next 2 weeks. I'm going to write. So I've got my two next articles are already written in the book. So in 2 weeks' time, I'm going to write a DJ Chark article, almost in direct competition with yours, explaining why DJ Chark is going to be a bust.
I love it, man. I love that. And maybe we'll get back on here and we'll talk about it.
Absolutely. So go on, back to Laviska. So what were you saying?
Okay, so I took him at the 6'10". All right. I traded up to grab him. That was before Robert Woods, yeah. Cooper Kupp, Tyler Boyd, Will Fuller, Deebo Samuel, Odell. Any of these guys popping out to you?
I'll be honest. Every single one of them except Deebo, I would take over Laviska.
All right. So this is just a difference of opinions. And that's what's so – that's what's so awesome about fantasy, right? Like, we can have a civil conversation about, you know, who we like versus who we don't like. Looking back at that draft board, I actually like Tyler Boyd a little bit more than Viska, yeah. But I'm still happy with the move because, like I said, I believe that both these guys can be top 20s, and I wanted to build this young team.
Yeah, so, well, absolutely. So I've to take you behind the curtain. So I've got Laviska Shenault. He's my wide receiver 39 at the moment in my tiers. I've got Cooper Kupp 23. I've got Odell Beckham 27. Robert Woods 28.
Cooper Kupp at 23, eh?
Yeah. Tyler Boyd 32. Will Fuller's 36. Brandon Cook's 37. And Debo's 40. So there you go. Wow. So yeah. So I'm pretty low on Laviska. And I'm equally as low. DJ Chark is currently sat there at wide receiver 33. So he's one spot behind Tyler Boyd.
I love it. I have them. Just pulling it up here for your sake. So I've got, see, this is what's so funny. I traded up to draft this guy. And I took, so I have Michael Pittman at wide receiver 27. I took him two rounds after at the 8-10. I have Laviska Shenault and DJ Chark back-to-back at wide receiver 31 and 32 in my dynasty ranks right now. That's behind Tyler Lockett, Adam Thielen, Will Fuller. I think I got to adjust these. I like to adjust my dynasty ranks basically once a month. I don't like to do it too much because I don't want to give like too much recency bias. Honestly, like a month is might even be too soon. But I got to take another look at this, reevaluate, because I do love both of these guys. I think they can both finish, like I said, in the top 20. I'm not ranking them there, but I think that they can both finish there, you know, with the things that we have, just in terms of like, as much as I like these players from a win now perspective, I think there's a lot more upside to be offered in the Tyler Boyds, in the Robert Woods, you know, in that conversation. So, yeah.
So whilst we're talking wide receivers then, so your final point is to talk about the free agent wide receivers. Okay. So there is an absolute plethora of options for teams to choose from at the moment. So if I just run through, I guess the headliners, you've got Allen Robinson, Kenny Golladay, Chris Godwin, Juju Smith-Schuster, Corey Davis, Will Fuller, Curtis Samuel, T.Y. Hilton. So if you're a team that can sit there with your, you know, okay, the Jets, they've got potentially 90 million in cap space. The only receiver that they've got under contract, because I think they might cut Jameson Crowder, is going to be Denzel Mims. Who are you going out and spending your money on?
Man, you know, that's a really, really good question. If I'm the Jets, I'm probably going with the youngest player available. I want to go add Juju. I want to go add, you know, maybe Corey Davis, but I think he profiles better as a wide receiver two type anyway. He fits that Tennessee offense really, really well. I think he actually could re-sign in Tennessee. You know, but I just wanted to kind of break these guys down into tiers, how I see them in terms of free agent assets, because I have Kenny Golladay, Allen Robinson, Chris Godwin, all in the tier one. I think Kenny Golladay probably gets franchise tagged. We're not going to talk too much about him because, like I said, he deserves that money. He was injured all year. He's had top five wide receiver finish, and, you know, he's going to be Jared Goff's best friend.
Yeah,
Allen Robinson, I'm super excited about. There's a bunch of landing spots that make sense. There's quite a few places that I'd like to see him land. And then Chris Godwin, I think, resigns. He just won a Super Bowl.
Breaking news on the pod. They have just someone. Let's try and find who the beat reporter is so that I can give him credit.
Somebody.
some person. So Tampa Bay Buccaneers wide receiver Chris Godwin himself has stated, "I want to be in Tampa, but end of the day, I want to get paid too." So, I mean, I would, like you, was basically saying he's going to get franchise tag. He's not going anywhere. But I think he's basically making sounds that he wants to get paid. At the end of the day,
well, the franchise tag makes sense.
Yeah,
you pay the guy in the. I believe the franchise, the way it works is it takes the top five paid players at the position, and then it gives you an average between those five players.
Yeah. And so it's a little bit more complicated than that, because it takes the average of the five players, and then it takes the average salary cap of the past five seasons.
Yes.
And produces a number. So because the salary cap is so much lower this
going
year,
up. Yeah.
Well, it's because it's dropped this year.
Yeah. But it goes up next year.
Will be. But because it's then taking the average of the 5 years, it will still have this low year included in the numbers. So the franchise tag won't be too bad. They've actually released the numbers.
If I had to guess, I'd say somewhere around 20 million for a wide receiver?
Let's find out. But so where do you think Allen Robinson's going to land them?
Man, I feel like this is the laziest and easiest decision, but I always pick Green Bay and I always pick Miami. Because like those are the two big voids I see. You know, realistically, I would actually love Allen Robinson in Washington. You know, I think they go and get a quarterback this offseason. I think they probably sign somebody or trade for somebody because they want to be competing now. They want to be competing shortly. This isn't a long-term game. So we'll see what they do with their quarterback position. But you get Allen Robinson there with Antonio Gibson, with Terry McLaurin. You know, and we're looking at an offense that 2 years ago we wanted nothing to do with. That's now an elite fantasy offense. I think he's still capable of being a wide receiver one on any team that he goes to in terms of fantasy. I love Allen Robinson. He's such a great player, great route runner, fantastic hands, quarterback's best friend, really. And wherever he goes, he's going to get paid. Allen Robinson will get paid.
And let's be honest, he's produced with,
the list of
quarterbacks he's had from college. You have Christian Hackenberg as his quarterback in college. He's had absolute abysmal play. You know, it's going to be quite exciting to watch him actually go and catch balls from someone that can actually throw the ball. So so the franchise tag for Chris Godwin is projected to be $15.8 million.
That's still pretty good. Pretty good receiver cheap money for a 24-year-old kid.
that's very affordable. So moving to your kind of second tier. So who's in your, I'm presuming it's headlined by Juju?
It is just Juju. So I actually have him in this second tier because I think that, like, I'm not as bullish on Juju's talent as a lot of people. I think that this guy's more of a slot receiver. He excels getting, you know, the short yardage. I think his average depth of target was 6.4 yards this year, the lowest in the NFL.
Pathetic this year.
It's like that's trash. And that's also a testament to the offense that he's playing in. Like when you've got two prolific playmakers, right? Chase Claypool was the deep guy. And then you got Deontay, who was their 10 to 15 yard possession receiver. And Juju's getting all this underneath stuff. And so I think he can go somewhere. This is where I actually got to talk about Green Bay because I would love him in this situation. The next guy I'm going to talk about, I also love in Green Bay. But Juju's a very interesting prospect. There's a lot of talk about him going to Oakland right now, which I actually like as well. I think you move him into the slot and you get, Ruggs and, you know, probably Edwards out wide. And then you have Darren Waller, you know, as your primary target hog. Like, I think that offense can be very, very, very tough to stop. And so I like that landing spot. I think Oakland's a good one.
My dream
Miami, man.
Yeah, I was going to say my dream Juju landing spot is Miami. I think if you can stick him as the, I think wherever he goes, Juju, I said this previously, but I think Juju needs to be the target leader, but in a role that can allow him to operate out the slot. So where
he's going
to
be like Tyler Boyd, man.
Yeah.
He's got to be like Tyler Boyd.
Suited is somewhere he can get 120 to 140 targets, but not have to line up outside. So somewhere that's already got potentially one, if not two, established outside receivers. And I think that if you can take him to Miami, you stick Preston Williams, you stick Devontae Parker on the outside. You've got Juju who can be that,
probably draft a guy, big
slot. Yeah. You've then build. Yeah, you've got that's your four wide set in Gesicki, who is a tight end, but doesn't actually line up as a tight end.
Yeah, he's pretty much a receiver.
exactly. And you've then got, you know, essentially two as best friends then. I think that if Miami are going to, you know, commit and build round two and that's the way they're going to go and not go out and trade for Deshaun, then I think that going and getting someone like a Juju is fantastic because it enables him
to win.
It really
just helps him.
Yeah. He wins quick, which, you know, the best thing for a quarterback in Tua's standpoint is someone who can win off the line of scrimmage and utilize his, you know, Juju's a big guy. He can use his size to body up slot corners who are traditionally the smaller corners, let's be honest, and enables him to win in that short to intermediate space.
Yeah. And he's super twitchy. Like he's a great route runner. He's just, you know, this is a 24-year-old kid we're talking about. He's obviously got some character issues, all the TikTok videos and whatnot. I think that's going to simmer down. And, you know, he's kind of got it figured out now. But yeah, I love Miami. Oakland, I'm okay with. There's a few landing spots. Like at the end of the day, these guys always surprise me. I get so excited about them going somewhere, and then they don't live up to my expectations.
Let's be honest. It's got Juju has got New York Jets written all over it. We're going to go and pay him $20 million a year. We're going to cut Jameson Crowder. He's going to be on the front page of every New York paper,
and he's going to suck.
He's going to be absolutely dreadful, and we're going to cut him in 2 years, and then he'll go age 26 to New England to be an absolute stud.
Be a star for the next 7 years.
That's the way the Jets work. That's the way the world works. So I've already conditioned myself to that fact.
All right, well, let me get into tier three here. So I've got Curtis Samuel, who's my favorite of this tier, but I also have Corey Davis and Will Fuller. Obviously, Will Fuller, an extremely prolific playmaker, had all of the PEDs issues this year. I was actually doing a read the other day. Man, I got to start citing my articles. I cannot remember who wrote this, and I apologize if you're listening and you did. But essentially, they're saying, Will Fuller's the PEDs that were in his body were essentially steroids, but those don't actually help any ligament or any type of tendons growth. It's just muscle based. Right. So you're just increasing your muscles, which, yes, that gives you a little bit more wear and tear. But the note to take away is that he didn't get injured all year, and this wasn't helping his ligaments injuries. This wasn't helping any of the hamstring pulls that he's had. He just got better, right, in terms of health. And so I think taking that, you basically had a full year off, and I like him as a deep ball prolific playmaker. I really think that he excels in that role. I have trouble valuing him as a fantasy wide receiver because when he plays, he's so freaking good.
Where have you got him as your? What are you doing with him? Buying him? You selling him? What are you happy paying for him?
So I actually just drafted him. Let me pull this up here. I just drafted him in a recent startup that I'm still in the middle of. I took him as my wide receiver 4 in, I think it was like the 8th or 9th round. And I was pretty happy taking that value because of the upside. I know he was a wide receiver 1 for the 8 weeks that he was playing this year. And you can talk whatever you want about the suspension, but I think that play speaks for itself. It wasn't, he was a fantastic player during that time. Here, let me pull up this
draft. To cite the, let's do this properly. So the guy that wrote the thread was Jake Dynasty FF, and he's at Dynasty _Jake. I also read the thread. It was very interesting.
Thank you.
I just can't get on board with Will Fuller as a player and that type of player. This comes back to what I value. It's like, I hate volume-based RB2s. I hate boom bust wide receivers, because the amount of times that you have a player like a Will Fuller who at the end of the season you can look at a piece of paper and it says, oh, he was a wide receiver 2, he produced, averaged 15 points a game, but actually what he did was he scored 5 points 3 weeks on the trot, and then he scored 47 points. Yeah, exactly like that. And it can win you a week, but it can probably lose you more weeks than it wins you. And I just think that I'm quite owning him anywhere.
I don't want him as a wide receiver 2. I don't want him as even a wide receiver 3. But as a flex play, those are the players I'm really looking for. I want weak winning upside out of my flex spot. If I get 40 points, the guy I'm playing against probably isn't winning, even if his studs go off, because he probably has 12 points in his flex spot or whatever. Right? So I took Will Fuller here. This is actually, I think this is really good value. I took him at the 11:01 in a 12-team super flex startup as my wide receiver 4. Players that went right before him: Curtis Samuel, Devontae Parker, Jalen Reagor, Hollywood Brown, Odell Beckham, Robbie Anderson, Tyler Locke, Michael Pittman, Robert Woods. We're now into the round of ahead of them. I took him in the 11th. Those were some of the 10th round guys. And then players that went right after him. This is really funny, actually. So went Curtis Samuel, Will Fuller, Corey Davis. Yeah. Also, Michael Gallup, Denzel Mims, Gabriel Davis are all in that conversation. So those were the players that went after him: Corey Davis, Michael Gallup, Darnell Mooney, Denzel Mims, etc. So for me, the upside at that point is it's astronomical versus, the upside to me of a Darnell Mooney is the most you're ever going to get is wide receiver 2, I think.
So, yeah, I think
I do love the kid. Don't get me wrong, but I don't see him as, he's not a wide receiver one, and I don't think he ever will be.
I think that at this point in the offseason, those are my favorite sales, is the young wide receivers that flashed a little bit that are probably never going to produce consistent for you. You know, Gabriel Davis and Darnell Mooney. I had a few shares of each, and I've sold every single one of them because if I'm able
to get Gabe Davis, I love this kid. He's one of my favorite rookie prospects.
But what's his ceiling?
Well, I mean, that's all dependent on what John Brown and Cole Beasley do. I think that this guy's the next.
What's the track record of fourth or fifth round picks that haven't produced as a top 50 wide receiver in a rookie year that have gone on to produce fantasy relevant? I can tell you because I did a study on it. No wide receiver drafted outside the top three rounds that has not finished as a top 50 receiver has gone on to have a wide receiver two season in the last, I think I went back 6 years in terms of my data. Wow. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, that is pretty astronomical. It's hard to fight that evidence, but I love that offense. And I just love this kid, man. Like the eye test, he passes it.
I get it.
He does all the intangibles right. And yeah, that's my take. I don't think you have to spend a whole lot either, right? We're in the 12th round I'm talking about.
But this drafting. Is it, is I think that he's being hyped up beyond belief at the moment.
Yeah, well, I mean, anytime you get those toe drags in the playoffs.
Yeah, but I sold him a couple of weeks ago for a late first, like in a super.
Yeah, that's,
league.
I
mean,
that's
obscene.
Easy.
That's absolutely obscene. You know, I hope the person's not listed at the moment, but I would have quite happily taken a mid-second and I got late first, so I'm quite happy. So Corey Davis, okay? I am a massive Corey Davis fan. I have been, you know, I'm sitting here delighted because I called him my must-buy before the season.
Last off-season.
I think I bought him in a league we're in for, I think it was 2 fourth-round picks last year.
Can you tell me what the track record is on wide receivers drafted in the first two rounds that missed the first, that sucked for the first three seasons of their career?
This is the thing, okay? So Corey Davis sucked for his first two seasons.
No, it wasn't all on him. It wasn't all on him.
But he also produced in his second season. People forget because he was the fifth overall pick and that kind of thing. But if you look at the stats, he actually had a decent second year. It was just that he was overshadowed because the team didn't do fantastic and it was all about Derrick Henry. But he was still averaging 12 points a game. He still had over 110 targets. Like, he has produced in flashes. And now he's going from a player that has produced in a limited passing volume. My literal dream, and I've been talking this into existence for the last 2 months, is Corey Davis is going to go to Green Bay and be the wide receiver two in Green Bay. And he's going to get 110, 120 targets. And he's going to be an absolute stud as the wide receiver two in Green Bay. I'm telling everyone, I think that's his role though.
He has to be a wide receiver too. He can't be the guy on a team. In my opinion, they tried that when they were in Tennessee. And like you said, he saw 120 targets, but when you see 120 targets and are only producing 12 fantasy points a game and those kind of come in waves, I mean, you're not in his second year, like people were still spending up to get Corey Davis. Yeah. So you were, that's part of the reason why people are, you know, they're so hurt by him is because of past years where they've spent up to draft him. It's the same thing with Derrick Henry, right? Yeah. People spent up to draft him in his first, second, it was his third year that he broke out in the last like 12 or six games or whatever. People were, you know, that year people were dropping Derrick Henry in like week eight, and then he blew up and he won people's fantasy championships. So I think that Corey Davis could be in a similar situation, but I think he does have to be a two. I love that landing spot with the Packers. I honestly didn't even think of that, but he does need to be that type. He needs to be in the middle of the field. That's his thing. Like, he's a big play receiver, but I love what they do in Tennessee in the play action. And like the thing that I could envision with Corey Davis is I see him running crosser routes. That's all I see. I feel like I just constantly see him running 15 yard digs, but he's good at them and he gets open. He's got good hands. And then once the ball's in his hands, he's a fantastic receiver. So,
and I think,
honestly,
I think that
Green Bay,
for me,
we're back in Tennessee.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, and a lot of this is I'm hyping him up, but it's based on value. And, you know, this is the thing that I'll bang on about constantly is that it's about any player at any point is I will own, but it's about that value point. And for Corey Davis, the reason I was so excited was that I was able to pick him up for a fourth, for a third last year. Yeah. Well, I think in the, as I said, the league we were in, I think I traded him, I think it was Pat for 2 fourths. So I'm quite happy with that. But you look at last year, so he was the wide receiver 30 on the season this last year. He averaged 13.7 points a game. He missed multiple weeks for injury. But you look at the guys, if you just go on a points per game basis and look at the guys that he finished ahead of, he scored more points than CeeDee Lamb. He scored more points per game than Chase Claypool, Kenny Golladay, Tyler Boyd, Jarvis Landry, T. Higgins, your boy DJ Chark. Like, no, this is in
let
a,
me tell you, DJ Chark didn't have the best 2020 season.
But this is a guy that's been in a run-first offense and has produced.
Yeah.
Either, if we're now saying he's going to go and get a decent role in a pass-first offense, he could be an absolute steal. He was really hyped at the end of the year and people were talking about maybe paying up a first for him. I think now that the kind of hype has died down, before he finds that landing spot, now is a great opportunity to go and buy Corey Davis because you can probably get him for a mid-second once everybody's suddenly becoming really infatuated with rookie picks.
Yeah.
And I think that this is a guy that is still really young. What are we talking?
Yeah, he's that's 20, what I was just going to say. 25, I believe. Yeah, 25.
You can get and so, like, 3-4 years.
We look at players success. Like this. Sorry, go on, buddy.
I was going to say, you can get 3-4 solid years of wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3 value out of a guy that you're going to have to pay wide receiver 4 value to go and buy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's money in the bank. And like we said, 25 years old, man. Like, don't give up on receivers at 25 years old. It's like something that's really important that I have to constantly remind myself in the fantasy landscape is these are real people doing real life things. Like, it's not like we're just talking about like scenarios, like we're talking about real people. And so players get better. They don't just come into the NFL and just stop progressing. Right. Like you said, Corey Davis is, he's had good years. And even this year where he was producing, you know, just shy of 14 fantasy points per game, that's a pretty safe wide receiver 2-3 floor. And if you can get that in your flex spot, and I think that the upside is higher than that. So, yeah, man, I actually like it. You've kind of changed my opinion on where I stand on Corey Davis, you know, because I kind of have written him off. But like we said, these 25-year-old receivers, second, third, you know, sometimes fifth-year guys who are still so, so young. Like, when they come into the league, we talk about breakout age all the time, right? When, you know, players come into the league, they're 20 years old, we're all excited about it, and then they bust in their 20-year-old, you know, in their first year in the NFL. I mean, did you expect them to be able to compete physically, mentally, like, with these 28, 27-year-old players who've been playing professional football for 7 or 8 years? Like, it does take time for these players to develop, so... I love that call on Corey Davis. I love him in Green Bay. I love him in Tennessee too, to be honest. I think he really fits that team. And yeah, man, I'm excited to see where he goes.
And at the end of the day, I sit here and I say I'm a draft capital guy. I think draft capital is, you know, the best predictor of future success in terms of a fantasy standpoint. And this is a guy that was the 5th overall pick in the draft a few years ago. Like, I can't sit here and say
are you beating the drum for Mike Williams too?
No. No, not at all. It's interesting you say that because I actually released a thread on Twitter this morning talking about a thing that I've kind of coined as the double breakout age. And basically it highlights guys that flash once in college, break that, you know, the breakout threshold of 20% dominator rating, and then don't do it again before their age 21 season. And it basically weeds out a series of guys that aren't successes in the NFL, and Mike Williams is actually one of those. Never really been a fan, but that's kind of just reiterated part of the reason why.
Are we going to see Rondale Moore in that same metric next year?
He was the reason why I kind of created the metric.
I love it.
I can't decide what to do with him. You know, he has got one of the best freshman age 18 seasons any wide receiver ever had.
Yeah.
And
but then he's basically hasn't done anything for 2 years. No.
And he's in a conference, you know, there's never been a wide receiver in that conference drafted before the fifth round.
Hmm.
And you might have two this year that could potentially sneak into the first round in Rondale Moore and Rashad Bateman. So it's interesting to look at, interesting for you. But so the last guy on your list then, so Curtis Samuel. So where are you at on Curtis Samuel?
Man, I have been tooting the horn for this kid all offseason. I just think, you know, 4.31 speed, 24-year-old free agent. He's gotten better every single year he's been in the league. He had, every statistical category has gone up in the past 4 years. The only one that went down this year was actually touchdowns to his 2019 season, but went up in yards, targets, receptions, and he had 200 yards on the ground, you know, over 1,100 all-purpose yards for Curtis Samuel. And just a guy that I truly believe in, like just the athletic profile of what he does on an offensive field. I think whoever's going to sign Curtis Samuel has a plan for him. I can't imagine that he just goes to a team and is, you know, like becomes their wide receiver three type of thing. You know, like he's getting signed to be a gadget player. They're going to use him in jet sweeps. They're going to use him in the running game. They're going to get him the ball in space, right? He's an athletic guy. I'm a big fan of this kid. I think, again, this is a dude that I'm touting to go buy right now in the off season. And I think he's probably got about the same price tag as Corey Davis does.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, hate to come back to the Jets, but I read a report again from Connor Hughes, who was basically saying he spoke to somebody and they're already penciling in Curtis Samuel to the Jets. And I think that, you know, he's a kind of guy that, yeah, he's never going to be a wide receiver one. He's never going to be that kind of prototypical X receiver that's, you know, you can pencil in for 130 targets a year. But he's shown that he's got that target floor. He's shown that he can be a, you know, a productive guy. And I think that in the right offense, in the right scheme, he could be an absolute steal.
I think, like, if he goes to the Jets and gets 5 to 6 touches a game, whether that's through the air or on the ground, like, I think most games he's probably going to have a big play or two. I really believe that because this guy's just a prolific playmaker. And like I said, any team that brings him in, they plan to use him that way. They're going to use him in the jet sweep game. Like that's one of my favorite things about Curtis Samuel is just how effective he is as a runner. Just, you know, get him the ball and let him do the work. Let him do some yak and pile it all up. So I'm a big fan of him. I would actually like to see him in a Jets uniform. I think that that'd be a good fit for him. We talked about the quarterback situation earlier, but this guy can come in and, like I said, be a playmaker. So
maybe I need to rebrand this pod as the 5 Yard Jets Pod because I feel like we've talked about the Jets far too much tonight already. Have you got an under the radar kind of receiver that you're targeting
not
or
really,
intrigued
man.
To
like,
see where
this,
they land?
These last two tiers for me are like it's kind of the old guys. That's how I look at it, right? So tier 4, I have Marvin Jones and Antonio Brown. You know, both +30. Marvin Jones just had his 30th birthday. Antonio Brown's 32 years old. I think Antonio Brown is pretty clearly going to stay in Tampa. I don't think we have to talk about that too much. I don't think he's going anywhere outside of wherever Tom Brady is. But then Marvin Jones is really, really interesting because this is a guy you're not going to get a whole lot out of him, you know, outside of this next year. But this is, you know, this is a player who I think you can buy for a third and is probably going to give you multiple wide receiver two, even some wide receiver one weeks, depending on his landing spot and where he goes. And like, again, this is a dude who for me is he's a wide receiver two on their team. He's a complimentary piece and he does that very, very well. He also brings high IQ to whatever receiving core he goes to, which is, you know, huge in terms of veteran experience at the wide receiver position. So I think that, you know, wherever he goes, he's coming in as a complimentary piece. He's probably the wide receiver three with big playability. I don't want to start him most weeks. Like I'll, you know, depending on the matchup, I'm, you know, I may be flexing him. But other than that, he's probably, you know, sitting at the back of my roster. And if you have him, I'm holding. If you, I wouldn't go buy him though. I'm not going to go that far.
Yeah. And to say I've got two potentially under the radar guys that I'm intrigued with. I'm not going to say that I'm in love with. I'm not going to say go out and buy, but I'm intrigued. And it's probably landing spot dependent. And that's Breshad Perriman. I think that he's actually been, you know, obviously I watched a hell of a lot of him with the Jets this year and he had that fantastic end of the year last year with Tampa. for the last 3 years, he's actually been very good.
Yeah, he has.
As I said, Sam Darnold couldn't get him the ball this year. So I'm intrigued where he's going to go. I think he could get, if he gets a decent landing spot, he could well be kind of an under-the-radar, essentially free piece that you can go out and buy. And the last guy is Zach Pascal. So he's a restricted free agent currently in Indy. I think he's going to be back. And I think that, there's a lot of talk at the moment about how that wide receiving corps, go out and buy Michael Pittman, go out and buy Paris Campbell, because, that offense is going to take a step forward now they've got Carson Wentz and all that kind of stuff. And I think that actually Zach Pascal could be the guy. He's, he came in as an under the radar in terms of his sort of draft profile and draft capital and that kind of thing. But, he had an 800-yard season last year. I think that actually he has shown that he can produce. And I think that, basically, let's be honest, you can probably go and pick him up off both of your waiver wires. So I'm quite intrigued to see if he does re-sign in Indy, where he could be.
I love it, man. I wanted to – sorry, I'm just looking over these free agents now. So I wanted to bring a couple guys' names up just to fill this – kind of this last tier out. So I think Nelson Agholor could be a guy that you can get super, super late again. We saw it this year, man. I didn't expect that by any means. He came out with Oakland and was able to – give us multiple wide receiver 1 weeks. It was pretty shoddy as to when you're going to get it. But again, he's on waiver wires in some dynasty drafts. Definitely worth a pickup, in my opinion, before he hits free agency. Because if he does go into, a position where he's able to step into targets like he was in Oakland, we knew he was signing in Oakland and no one was excited about it. And then he actually showed us what he could do if he can catch the ball. And so I wanted to throw him out there. Tim Patrick's another guy who is just consistently been good. He's just been good enough, right? He's never been a fantastic player, never had any extreme attributes that stood out to me, but pretty good route runner, sure hands, smart football player. And then the last one is actually Josh Reynolds, just 26 years old, been playing in the shadows of Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods for the past 3 years. And, we saw it this year. We saw what Josh Reynolds could really do when he actually got some volume. So I think he goes somewhere. He probably gets into the wide receiver 2-3 conversation. And, this could be a guy that you're scooping off of waivers for pretty much free. And, could turn into a wide receiver 3. I truly believe that. So, I definitely want to throw him out there. And then for my man, Craig, because I know he loves D.D. Westbrook. I'm not a fan. I'm not on board, but I want to throw it out there because at Coach Craig Sports is still a believer and he tells me all the time.
Yeah, I bought him pretty heavy 2 years ago. I was fully
convinced. Is that why you're off of Visca and Chark now?
Yeah, I think that's it. I'm just burned. I was big in on
you just burned Justin. My Jags receivers.
Yeah, I was big in on Justin Blackmon as well a few years ago. So yeah, I'm all out on that entire franchise, let's be honest.
And what about Cam Sims, man? Last guy I want to throw up there.
I just don't know. These are the kind of guys. So this is the inverse of what we talked about with running backs, in that there's a load of these guys that, Cam Sims could potentially go somewhere. He could potentially be interesting. He's looked decent in flashes, but is he ever?
But you're
be,
like, eh. I mean, Greg you, Ward, same are, conversation.
Are you me. Ever? Basically, here's the question: are you ever going to tick the box next to Cam Sims' name, or are you ever going to put him in your starting lineup? Ever?
Yeah, that's a good question.
So, what's the point in probably rostering not, him? So, what's right? the point in rostering yeah. him? You know, that's
no, that's actually a fantastic method.
but that's what it comes down to, is that. With those end of bench spots, running back, it takes us, even if it's 3 injuries, it's ridiculous. But who'd have, apart from, Jeff Wilson, who'd have said, Tevin Coleman, Jarrett McKinnon, Jermichael Hasty, everyone's going to get injured and Jeff Wilson's going to be the only back standing?
Yeah. And we couldn't have predicted that.
No, yeah. I mean, I'd like to point out, I rostered him on 100% of my rosters last year. So
there you go.
So maybe I was the one that was saying it. But those are the guys that if it takes injuries to start. But say Cam Sims, okay, say he goes and signs with, comes back to Washington, is the wide receiver 4 there. even if there's three injuries ahead of him in the wide receiver court, are you feeling comfortable starting Cam Sims based on the fact that there's no other wide receivers and he's going to get double covered? You're just never going to start him. So what's the point in rostering him, I guess, is kind of my overall thoughts on those kind of guys.
Look, the only thing I can say on that is I've never rostered Kiki Kuti, and then I started him at the end of last year in my championship run.
So fair. What I would say, slightly different type of player, and I'd also say that Kiki Kuti, better draft capital, better player profile.
In a better offense.
And also has flashed in terms of his rookie year he produced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just injuries, man.
Whereas Cam Sims has shown a couple of decent plays, but he's never, I don't know his stats in front of me, but I bet he's never
do nothing.
Yeah, I bet he's never had more than 12 points in a week.
Yeah, maybe once where he had like two touchdowns or something like that, right?
Absolutely. But this has been an absolute blast. Thank you so much for coming on, Jules. Remind us, let's go. I know you've got your Viridian Global stuff and your swag. So plug away. Let's hear, where can we find you?
Let me get into it. So Viridian Global, fantastic company. If you want to get any type of swag work done or any type of merchandise done for your own company or for Dynasty Island, message Will over at It's Harris Time on Twitter and Junebug as well. Those two are just doing some fantastic work at Viridian Global. That's where you can find all of my merch. We got Point After toques, hats, hoodies, shirts, no sweatpants yet, but I'm getting Will on it. And I'm super excited about it. It is really just it's such a cool feeling to be able to throw on my own products hoodie, you know? And so great material, great equipment that they got over there. And I love what they're doing. Moving on from Viridian Global, I want to just touch on a Point After sponsor real quick, which is Monkey Knife Fight. You can use promo code TNFF and match up to $50 on your first deposit. I'm not 100% sure on if they actually work in the UK or not yet. You'd have to.
I believe
I had you on a pod. You said that didn't work.
They weren't working in the UK in the season. I don't know if they're up and running now, but certainly in season they weren't.
Well, I can reach out to Nick. I am in a dynasty league with him. He's the owner of Monkey Knife Fight. Great dude. But definitely check it out. They've got all different kinds of prop bets too. It's not just football. If you're into soccer or football, as you guys,
I was going to say, you can't call it soccer. You can't come on a British pod and call it soccer.
I can't call it soccer on this pod. But MLS, if you're over here. They've got all kinds of stuff over on Monkey Knife Fight, UFC, really any kind of sporting event that you're into placing prop bets on, they've got it covered. So definitely go check them out. You can find my podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, really anywhere that you find them. You can also find it over on the True North FFB website and the, on my Twitter page. So go there. It has all the info. That's everything I got, Rich. Awesome. I go live on Fridays at 9 o'clock.
Absolutely.
There we go. Well, now it's all out.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. It's been an absolute blast. And keep listening, guys. I look forward to hearing your thoughts on this pod. And we'll speak to you again next week.